Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, the 3rd of July, and from the studios of Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany, this is Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo. Coming up on this broadcast, the UN Security Council is criticized over its decision to impose travel ban and asset freezes on six generals from South Sudan.
The council does not want to get engaged politically and put pressure on the political leadership, so they have imposed sanctions on these military leaders.
And right groups in Uganda are voicing concerns over a draft legislation designed to regulate NGOs.
The NGO board would have the power to deregister or dissolve a non-governmental organization for any reason that the board deems necessary. Any reason is a very sweeping clause which gives the NGO board broad and vast powers.
Do stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
The Human Rights Council of the United Nations has decided to send monitors to South Sudan to assess allegations of horrific human rights abuses. The Council's resolution recounts a long list of violations, including the targeted killing of civilians, mass displacement, sexual violence, and the use of child soldiers. This move by the Rights Council comes after the more powerful UN Security Council had imposed its sanctions on the army chief. Heiko Florence and Assumpta Latus with this fact box.
As conflict continues in South Sudan between the army and rebel groups, the United Nations Security Council has intervened by imposing sanctions on six military commanders coming from both sides of the civil and ethnic divide in the African country.
Commander of President Salva Kiir's Guard Unit, Major General Marial Chanwong Yol Mangok, Lieutenant General Gabriel Yok Riak, and 3rd Division Commander Major General Santino Deng Wo are three government generals accused of threatening national stability.
Along with them, there are also rebel commanders Major General Simon Gatwich Dahl, Major General James Kwang Chol, and Major General Peter Gadit. All six who are now subject to a global travel ban and assets freeze for as long as the conflict prevails.
U.S. Ambassador to the UN Samantha Power, while emphasizing the sanctions, said that those who commit atrocities and undermine peace will face consequences, as the generals are the first people to be blacklisted in the conflict, which began in December 2013.
Power said the U.S. is appalled by reports of atrocities against South Sudanese civilians, including gang rape and burning people alive in their homes. The ongoing conflict has taken a toll in the country by creating a humanitarian crisis, forcing more than 2 million people to flee their homes, and has already killed thousands.
Akshaya Kumar, the Sudan and South Sudan policy analyst for the Enough Project, said that this is an important step forward, as it is the first multilateral evidence of an attempt to hold people accountable for the gross human rights abuses that are taking place in South Sudan.
Enough Project, which aims to end genocide and crimes against humanity, said while the six commanders are individually responsible for the warring parties' inability to reach a durable peace agreement, they nevertheless have been tied to grave human rights abuses and indisputable violations of previous ceasefire agreements.
Heiko Flores and Assumpta Latus. Peter Schumann is a former head of the UN mission in that country, and my colleague Mark Caldwell has been talking to him about changes in the ruling SPLM party. But first, he started by asking him whether he thought the targeted sanctions will help end the civil war.
In my view, these sanctions demonstrating a weakness of the Security Council, in fact. The Council does not want to get engaged politically and put pressure on the political leadership, so they have imposed sanctions on these military leaders without really specifying why these three leaders were selected, nor specifying precisely sort of what do they have to do that the sanctions imposed will be lifted. So it's all very, very vague and very non-committal. the Security Council avoids a very clear political statement how they see the political negotiations going on between the government and the opposition.
There's been another development. Pagan Amoom has been reinstated as Secretary General of South Sudan's ruling party, the SPLM. He was one of a number of party officials who were detained when the fighting first broke out in Juba in December 2013. How important is his re-entry into South Sudanese politics?
Very difficult to judge at this moment because not all of the 10 detainees have joined the government. It's not yet clear how this will work out. Of course, Pagan Amoom, representing a particular community, the Shilluk, no, is trying to come back into the political game. It is a bit surprising that he has done this at this moment, but I don't think it will really change the equation in the negotiation process.
Why do you say it is surprising that he's done this at this particular time?
I was expecting that he and the other detainees may stay sort of as a third force outside the two power brokers. And according to my information, there are other from the 10 former detainees who have exactly sort of maintained this role as a third group. Because, you know, we are also faced with another very, very critical event, and this is in the Equatorias. A deal between the main protagonists, the Dinka and the Nua representatives, at the expense of the Equatorians, will be met with massive, massive resistance from the Equatorians. And we see that the last couple of days, very senior Equatorians have opposed the SPLM action in Western Equatoria.
What will his reinstatement mean for the Arusha process of reconciliation within the SPLM?
There I see a positive element. If the assumption is correct that a united SPLM will allow a political reconciliation, then I think there is an advantage. But I'm very skeptical about, you know, just fixing the SPLM internal struggle and then come to an agreement on how to share power and distribute the wealth without a very active role of civil society. And I think this must be the demand also from the international community, without a very clear and decisive role of those who have not participated in the mass killing, the civil society representatives. I don't think we will ever see a lasting peace and reconciliation in South Sudan.
Peter Schumann, a former head of the UN mission in South Sudan.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
French President François Hollande is expected in Cameroon today. He is visiting the country at a time when anti-French sentiment there is growing. In particular, Cameroonians have been unsettled by reports claiming that most of the weapons seized from members of the militant Islamist group Boko Haram are manufactured in France. Cameroon, along with Chad, Niger and Nigeria, is seeking to defeat the militants who have killed thousands over the last 6 years. From Yaoundé, Moki Kinzeka reports.
Mr. Minister of Higher Education, sir, it is common to listen to all appointment decisions at the taste.
Awudu Mbayasipren of Cameroon's Social Democratic Front Opposition Party calls on other lawmakers to task and questions ministers at the National Assembly over what he calls France's domination of Cameroon's political, social and economic life.
And I continue to say this is in gross violation of the Constitution of the Republic of Cameroon, for a country that...
Awudu Mbaya says Cameroon is a bilingual country with English and French as official languages, but because of France's history as Cameroon's colonial masters, the country's authorities are neglecting the English language.
It's a thing that's boiling in the hearts of all English-speaking Cameroonians. I decided to pull down all signposts that were written only in French language without the English equivalent.
Yimgang Moyo-Theophile, president of the Citizens Movement political party, says anti-French sentiments are also provoked by France's grip on Cameroon's economy. In 1948, before Cameroon's independence, France signed economic partnership agreement that has been mortgaging Cameroon's petroleum and forest resources to the country. Theophile says 65% of Cameroon's financial reserves are stored in the French treasury following the agreement.
La France a toujours la main mise sur...
Bilateral agreements between France and Cameroon authorize mostly French enterprises to exploit most of Cameroon forest and mining resources even when Chinese companies propose more profitable deals. The CFA franc currency used by Cameroon was pegged to the French franc in an agreement that should no longer exist because France now uses the euro, yet still controls Cameroon's currency.
Moyo adds that France has also failed to support the war against Boko Haram.
On a vu le Cameroun se battre pratiquement tout seul.
Cameroon and Nigeria and later Chad and Niger have been fighting against Boko Haram without France contributing soldiers and technological know-how, in spite of the fact that it was in France that the war against Boko Haram was jointly declared by five African heads of state.
The drone français. Ce qui se passe.
In March this year, Chad's communication minister, Hassan Sila Ben Bakari, during a visit to Cameroon, said 40% of arms and other war material used by the terrorist group Boko Haram were of French origin. The French foreign minister, Laurent Fabius, during his visit to Cameroon in the month of March this year, told me accusations they support Boko Haram are unfounded.
I have been very surprised, when I was discussing with Madame Ambassador, when she told me that here some people were saying or thinking that France was not against Boko Haram. It's a figment, but a horrible figment of their imagination.
The Ambassador of France to Cameroon, Christine Robichon, says these issues raised against her country will be clarified in Holland's four-hour visit to Cameroon.
C'est effectivement quelque chose, une visite importante.
During his visit, François Hollande will discuss issues concerning the eradication of Boko Haram and the challenges France has been facing in its relationship with Cameroon.
Des exactions de Boko Haram.
That report was compiled by Moki Kinseka, and you are listening to Africa Link coming to you from DW Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany.
Human rights.
Rights groups are calling on Uganda's Parliamentary Committee on Defense and Internal Affairs to reject many of the provisions in a bill designed to regulate the activities of non-governmental organizations. The groups are complaining that the language of the bill will allow the government to block independent criticism, which is crucial in any democracy. Maria Barnett works for Human Rights Watch in Uganda. Mark Caldwell asked her for an example of the wording in the bill that was causing concern and how it would be misused.
Yeah, I think there are two good examples. For example, under the current bill, the NGO board would have the power to deregister or dissolve a non-governmental organization for any reason that the board deems necessary. Any reason is a very sweeping clause which gives the NGO board broad and vast powers to stop the work of NGOs or to prevent the work of NGOs in all sectors. Another troubling measure in the bill is a proposal that there would be criminal sentences for anything that the board deems violates the dignity of all Ugandans. And I think it's fair to say that in all countries, the dignity of a people varies, that there needs to be space to express divergent views as to what constitutes integrity, morality, and dignity. And this is not something that can be controlled by a single government entity, particularly one that's housed within the Minister of Internal Affairs, where there's also police and other security organs.
There are elections coming up in Uganda next year. Do you see this as one of the reasons for this crackdown on NGOs?
I think it's an opportune time to try to intimidate the work of civil society. We've certainly seen over the last 5 years increasing efforts from government bodies to stifle the works of critical groups. We saw serious threats to Uganda Land Alliance, a group that was documenting unlawful evictions, and their work touched on some people in power. They were nearly deregistered, threatened with deregistration, and they were told that they needed to apologize to the president, retract their report. The situation got quite bad. We've obviously seen groups representing the rights of homosexuals in Uganda have a great deal of trouble and their events be closed. And we've seen that groups working in oil and gas sector, which is an increasingly important issue here, face a lot of problems, have their meetings closed, and have their staff threatened. So this is part of a trend we've seen, but clearly elections tee up a critical time. It's an absolutely critical time for people to be able to express their views freely. And we are very concerned that the attempt to pass this bill, particularly in a rushed manner, a lot of the MPs, the parliamentarians need to head out on campaigns, that there be ample time to reflect on the large and complex implications of such a broad bill.
If this bill becomes law, how would it affect the work of your organization, Human Rights Watch, in Uganda?
Well, we're slightly apart in the sense that we're not a registered organization here, but we share the concerns of many groups. I spoke at a press conference, groups from working on corruption and land rights and oil and gas, many of them expressing their concerns for how this would affect their work. I mean, the first thing that would happen should this bill become law would be that all organizations would be compelled by law to register.
Maria Burnett from Human Rights Watch in Uganda. Paga is a town in Ghana's Upper East region and is also on the main road linking Ghana to Burkina Faso. Now, because fuel is cheaper in Ghana than in Burkina Faso, there is a lively illicit cross-border trade in that commodity. Ghanaian officials have been trying to stamp out the smuggling, but so far their efforts have met with only limited success, as Maxwell Sook reports from Paga.
The weather is airy here this morning and a group of young adults are sitting under a cluster of neem trees playing drowse, a popular game for many locals in Paga. The spot has become known as the Royal Ghetto Club of Paga, where many youth converge on a daily basis. Mensa Frimpong Cyprian is among those playing the game. Cyprian holds a degree in chartered accounting, but he has no job. So how do you survive? I ask him.
By the benevolence of my mother, at least I always get breakfast, lunch and supper. But as a young guy, I have to, my other needs I have to attend to, but I can't do anything. So that is how we are struggling.
Most young men in Paga are jobless and tend to fuel smuggling with neighboring Burkina Faso. We know it is not good, but man must survive, Frimpong told me.
There are no jobs. People are not even building houses. You can't even carry concrete. So what work are you going to do? What does the government or the authorities expect us to do to survive?
Clement Awompang is another member of the group and has ever been arrested for smuggling. But he says if the trade would stop, then careers and jobs must be provided for them.
If there is work today, plenty of them will stop the smuggling because sometimes soldiers will come and arrest them, beat them, police will come, beat them, some will even wound them, but they have no option than to still do.
Clement studied computer engineering, but for the past 2 years, he has not come close to getting a job. To get more information on the issue, I took a taxi cab to the Paga border post. The cabby told me that smuggling is still pretty easy.
One person can buy a full tanker and take it to the bush and remove all the fuel.
At the border, a fleet of cargo trucks are waiting to pass. Very quickly, one of them was cleared and took off, but no official agreed to speak to me. Back at the Royal Ghetto Club, people like Clement Awompang says it's up to the government to provide young men like himself with a perspective for the future. Otherwise, they will have no choice but to continue smuggling.
Maxwell Sook reporting from northern Ghana.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja, Africa Links correspondents bring Africa stories to you. your say.
It's time now to hear what you, the listeners, have to say about the stories we have been reporting. Crispin Mwakideu joined me in the studios.
Yes, a lot has been happening in Africa, Abu. Ebola has returned to Liberia, killing a 17-year-old boy. But the health ministry assured the citizens there is no need to panic yet. But still, as you can imagine, the news has sent shockwaves across the West African nation.
Exactly. That's because almost 2 months ago, the World Health Organization declared Liberia free of Ebola. What have people been saying about the resurgence of Ebola in Liberia?
Well, Aliyu Muhammad Al-Kassim from northeastern Nigeria sent an email saying, "The recent discovery of a new Ebola case is indeed a shocking story. We began to heave a sigh of relief, believing that the Ebola virus had been thrown overboard in Africa, but the situation seems to be reversing."
I wouldn't necessarily say it's reversing per se, but it's obviously a huge setback for those fighting the virus in Liberia. So does Aliyu have any advice for Liberians?
Oh, definitely, yes. Aliyu made this passionate appeal saying, "I therefore suggest that the public health authorities to ensure that the suspected people who might have had interactions with the deceased teenage victim should be strictly monitored to avoid the rapid outbreak of the deadly virus, as was the last outbreak that claimed the lives of many Liberians."
After months of battling with the virus, I am pretty sure most Liberians are now better prepared and more aware of what to do and what not to do. Do we have any other comments, Crispin?
Yes, Abu, we do. And this time it's about the political standoff in Burundi.
Burundi held its parliamentary elections on Monday, which was boycotted by the opposition. The African Union and the European Union did not send any observers, saying the violent climate was not conducive for holding a free and fair election.
And commenting on a story about the elections on our Facebook page, Anyegbu Chibuzor from Nigeria said, "How can someone force himself on an entire country? Sit-tight syndrome is the problem with most African leaders. Nkurunziza should drop his ambition for the good of all." Finally, we got an email from Sunil Dungana in Nepal. He says he enjoys listening to Africa Link and commended the show for its great contents. However, Sunil says he would like to hear more feature stories and human interest stories.
I didn't even know Africa Link reaches Nepal. Anyways, but we do have these stories already on Tuesdays on Africa on the Move and Making a Difference, and on Fridays, Human Rights Segment, don't we?
Well, yeah, we do. But what Sunil would like to hear more often are stories such as, and I quote, "The story of African migrants who desperately try to get into Europe. Interviews with family members who have lost loved ones in the beautiful European dream," end of quote. And that's all for this week's Your Say, Abu.
Thank you, Crispin. And many thanks to you, Sunil, and all those who participated in this week's Your Say. The best comment I would say is from Sunil, who is basically coming in for the very first time. Remember, you too can win a great prize on Your Say by simply listening to the stories we are airing each week, then tell us what your opinion, either via text message to country code 491609575910, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW53110, Bonn, Germany. Your Say will be back at the same time next week.
Africa on the Move. Behind the headlines. Making a difference. Human rights. Listen to Africa Link's special weekly reports, bringing you more in-depth reporting.
And now a brief reminder of our main stories. The UN Human Rights Council has decided to send money to South Sudan to assess allegations of horrific human rights abuses. President Francois Hollande of France is due in Cameroon today for talks. We've also been talking to Human Rights Watch about a planned crackdown on NGOs in Uganda, and I've also been hearing about fuel smuggling in northern Ghana. In other news from Africa, suspected Boko Haram militants have carried out two attacks, killing around 150 people in Borno State, northeastern Nigeria. You will find that story on our website, dw.com/Africa. There, we come to the end of Africa Link for this week, and thank you for being there with me. Mark Caldwell will be here with you on Monday. Do join him if you can. Until next time, my name is Abubakar Jalo, wishing you a splendid weekend. Bye.